fighting for America.
I can promise you one more thing. Even if Israel has to stand alone, Israel will stand.
Fighting for Idaho.
The Iranians, when they sat down, said, look, we want you to know that we're going to work towards a treaty. If we get there, though, it's got to go to our equivalent of a parliament, and they've got to approve it. You mean to tell me that Iran, they've got a more representative government than America?
Fighting for you.
They're like, hey, this is a great location. I would love to be here, but there's a sentiment domain thing hanging over our head. It's a tough call.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Thank you all for joining us. Don't forget to give us a follow. Kevin Miller Show on Twitter, at Kevin Miller Show. And you can see the tweets between myself and Rachel Sutherland of Fox News Radio. Very stimulating stuff. By the way, I do want to once again thank our great friends at CapEd Credit Union. They love the teachers. We love the teachers for believing in our program. We are getting ready to go back to the schools starting Monday. We will be at Bishop Kelly High School. We'll be doing that throughout the spring. Do you want to thank Ray Amaya and Dave Burnett for their work behind the scenes and our great friends at Chick-fil-A. A big event this year when we're doing our school program. We're focusing in this year on, you know, post-high school prep. You know, what program specifically are these folks learning in public and private schools, and maybe even some homeschools this time around, where we focus in on what these folks are learning and the skills that they acquire in high school if they go on to tech school or the military or college or what have you. So I'm very excited about that and excited to see our friends at Bishop Kelly coming up on Monday. Let's go to our friend in faith, Nagmeet Abedini, once again joins us. Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning, Kevin.
Well, it's been a busy week. You're always busy, whether speaking with us or, you know, speaking around the world. I know one thing, you probably would like to be retired from the speaking circuit, and you hope and you pray and you want others to make sure that that happens with the return of your husband, Pastor Saeed.
I do. I'm not a speaker. I've been thrown in different arenas. I do it because of my faith and for sight. So, but it's been stretching me and getting me out of my comfort zone. But I do it for, I've been doing it for the last 2.5 years, and I hope this is the last year.
Well, you know, people around the Treasure Valley, around the state, and around the world are praying that that happens. You know, a lot of folks were perhaps concerned about Netanyahu coming to town and speaking. From your perspective, from the perspective of your husband, Pastor Saeed, and wanting to get him home and working to make that happen, what did you think of Benjamin Netanyahu coming to town and, you know, making his case about Iran?
Well, this is probably the hardest. It's very hard for me because I agree with what he says and his fears. But at the same time, I don't know what that means for my husband. I'm just hoping, I know God has a solution. God is bigger. And my prayers are with him and his people and the Jewish people. And we don't want, I saw his heart when he said not never again, that his people have always been under attack. So my heart goes out and I've always prayed for him and the Jewish people. But I don't know. It seems like a complicated problem to solve, but I know that God can solve it. I don't know what that means for my husband if no deal is made. But at the same time, I don't know. I agree with what he had to say as well. I hope there's a good deal that's made that, you know, for the sake of the world, not just my husband, that there's a deal that, is made that benefits everyone and, Netanyahu said, and my husband is released also, so everyone wins.
You know, I was watching a special, that Anthony Boudreau guy who travels the world, the food guy. Do you know who he is?
Yes.
Okay, and I don't know if you saw it. He went to Iran, and he was talking to folks, and, you know, it was interesting because he's talking to these two journalists, and you know, a week after they leave and they're, you know, he's smacking Saudi Arabia and others. And, well, you know, the Saudis, they don't have the freedom that they have in Tehran and Iran and all. And then these two people just disappear, and he casually mentions that, well, the husband's been gone for 6 weeks, but the wife has been released, and that's just life in Iran. And when you speak about your husband and his good works and what he's done, it's got to be a culture shock, not only to us in Idaho, but people around the world, that this happens quite frequently.
It does. As you mentioned, we see it on the show, a food show, where he speaks with a couple people, and they just very, I mean, what they mention is not even anything negative about the government. They just give their opinion that they, you know, and just a very respectful opinion, and they're gone. They're arrested. They're in prison. And this is something normal in Iran. You don't know when you're next, and you're always living under the fear of what you would say or do, that you would be, you would end up in prison. And that's so much so different than what we have here. There's no freedom of religion. There's no freedom of speech. There's no freedom of thought. It's a different world. It's a different world. And Saeed, here's Saeed working with the Iranian government on an orphanage, and he's arrested. And it's something that was not expected.
And Nagmeh, for people that may be hearing you for the first time at 580KIDO, he didn't do this on his own. He was in communication with these folks. He had received their permission, their blessing to do this.
He was actually encouraged by them to do this. He was working with the Iranian government. With their encouragement, he started this orphanage. It was the government. He was working closely with the government on this orphanage, the government of Iran, and it was Muslim kids that were to be in that orphanage, and all of a sudden, completely unexpected, it disappears, and we didn't know where he was for about a week, and then we realized he was put in prison about a week into it. And he left in June of 2012, and we expected him back in July, and never expected that this would happen to him.
For the average folks in Iran, what's their life like? It's just business as usual that you have the religious, the mullahs running the show.
It is. It's very oppressive. It's something that living in the United States, you would never imagine. You can't express your thoughts. You can't express what you believe. You can't believe differently than their radical version of Islam or the way they interpret it. So a lot of you're arrested based on what you believe, on what you think. If you say anything negative about the government, if you say, I'm not happy, you're put in prison. It's more of a dictatorship. It's completely... People live under fear and control, and it's economically, the people are, generations are living with each other within the same house. They're under a lot of pressure, it's just a very hard country to live in. But most of the people don't agree with the government. What people need to realize is the Iranian people love America. The Iranian people don't want to fight with Israel. They don't want to attack Israel. This is 10% of the hardliners that want to do this. And a lot of Iranian people are open to the gospel of Jesus Christ. They want to know about other religions and other beliefs, and they're pursuing other things. They've been disillusioned by Islam. They're tired of religion. They're tired of what they've seen, and they're looking for, they're young. They're in their 30s and younger. 70% of Iran is 30s and younger, and they're looking for other alternatives to Islam. But unfortunately, the few percent, the hardliners, control everything.
It's almost as if they're reliving the real-life gospel today, where you have a government like the Romans who used to persecute the Christians.
Exactly. The Christians, many disappear. They're killed. Iran, you know, talks negative about ISIS, but they're doing the same thing with the Iranian people. They're a lot of them, Christians are disappearing. They're killed. They're in prison. They're given long imprisonment services. Churches are being shut down. There's no freedom of religion. And as you mentioned, it's the people are pursuing God, but they're being paying a price for it. There is a plan to there's a Holocaust happening for the Christians in the Middle East right now. where every country, it seems like, is trying to destroy them and get rid of them.
Well, and how does this play into your beloved husband, Pastor Saeed, where you have the ISIS people? We've heard that the ISIS people are in the Iranian prisons. His life has been threatened. He's been tortured. And, you know, Nagmeh, through the blessings of the Lord Jesus Christ, most of us will just use those terms as words, but you know it as some, you know, as actions against your husband, and your husband is actually feeling those what those words actually are. I mean, torture is just a word to us, but he's actually being tortured.
He is, and it's really a miracle he is alive with the hands of these hardliners that want him dead, and they've put ISIS in his prison. They've put Al-Qaeda. They've threatened. There's been fellow prisoners that have tried to take his life. And so it's even a miracle he's been alive the last 2.5 years. But I know, I remember, I haven't been able to watch the video, but I know someone told me that with the 21 martyrs that ISIS killed, one of the things they yelled out was, "Jesus, you're all we have. Jesus, you're all we have." And you know, for Christians, there is a time where you're in prison and you're tortured and you're beaten, but you do have Jesus. And I know that from the time of the first martyr, Stephen, when they were stoning him and his face is just glowing and he's forgiving his enemies and says, "Forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." I think there's a time where you're under so much pressure for Jesus and for the gospel, and God just steps in and scoops you up or cradles you. And I know with the martyrs that were killed in the hands of ISIS, and with the martyrs over the years, over the last 2,000 years, and those who are in prison, they do have Jesus. They have a relationship. They don't need to have, they might not have a Bible, they might not have a church, but they have that one relationship that they can cling to and that holds them through. And I know that's what Saeed has.
Nagmeh, please stand by. More coming up with Nagmeh.
Your trust every morning. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Up all night. Stay up all night.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Nagmeh Abedini with us. Nagmeh, let's talk about your faith and your belief that your husband will be returned. It is easier said than done, but you're an example to all of us each and every day.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate all of your support. I don't think I could have continued this last 2.5 years without all the prayers and support, especially from people in Idaho, all the support. And you've been a great help and support, and your friendship has really meant a lot to me. You know, it's been difficult. I do hope that I do believe that he is going to come home. I don't know when. I don't have a timeline. I've asked God if this is the year, and I've hoped for that. My son's birthday is in a couple weeks, and he's hoping, since he told the president that he wants daddy home for his birthday. He has a lot of hope. It's hard as a mom to watch that and to know that it's probably not going to happen with all the negotiations happening now. But I do have hope. The hope keeps me going. But I don't know when this nightmare will end. I hope it's this year. Anytime this year would make me happy, but I don't know if it will be this year or how long it will be. But I always hope that it's soon.
Nagmeh, as a young lady of faith, a mother, a wife, a person that has been asked to go across the world to speak about her belief in support of her husband, what do you say to people right now that are battling something, whether it's illness, whether it's injury, whether it's a loss of faith?
You know, I think to push through it, what I've learned is whatever you're battling, relationship, injuries, even if you're doubting, just keep at it, allow it to draw you close to God, to really get the hard questions of who is God and getting to know God and pursuing him. Allow it to do that in your life. And once you're able to get to that source and you realize the reality of Jesus and then it really does, you find yourself in a place of much hope, much peace, and much joy, no matter what's happening in your life, no matter the illness, no matter the relationships that are falling apart, or whatever it is, finances. And you just, when you discover that intimacy with God through Jesus Christ, then really nothing in the world, no bad news or nothing can shake you. You can be walking on water and there's storms around you and you will be okay. You can have peace and joy. And that's what I've discovered, that, every single day God's grace has been sufficient for me. He's been able to give me the strength to get up despite the nightmare me and my kids are in, our family's in. But I've been allowing things. And if you allow suffering in your life to draw you closer to God, then you discover something that's amazing, true joy and peace. And that's what I would tell everyone. And ultimately, that's what our life is about, to discover this bigger, I guess, discover God and really live life the way we're supposed to live it, full of life and full of meaning.
Nagmane, when you look at the evil that we're up against, and again, most of us, when we see the ISIS people, whether we're scared, concerned, you have a special sensitivity to it because of where your husband's at. We have to count on our faith to overcome them when they call us out and do what they're doing.
It does. I think once you have, and we're seeing, we shouldn't think that we're here in the United States and we're so separated from persecution. I do believe that it's coming. But I think like ISIS, when you're faced with that, you either walk away or what those 21 Christians did, you just cling to God and he helps you through the tortures and the beatings and the beheadings. And that's what I discovered in this trial when Saeed was taken and my whole world was turned upside down. I could either get mad at God and walk away and just crumble to pieces, or I could hold on to God and just cling to him and find the strength to be a single mom and to be there for my kids and to fight for my husband. I've traveled. I just came back from D.C. and got to speak in front of, a very political arena, CPAC. But God gives me the strength to even stand up and speak where at my strongest point 3 years ago, I would have never done that.
Well, what was it like? I mean, CPAC is a very political animal event. What was that like? I mean, it's the Star Wars bar scene times 25.
It was, I got up there and I thought, what am I doing here? And I was hearing all the speeches. And, I thought, here's a different group of people that I can share about Saeed and have them, do something and get more from get. Maybe some of them have not heard about Saeed's situation and they have connections and people they can reach out to and at the same time, share about my faith. But it was very hard. It was probably the hardest thing I did. And as soon as I got up there, I just was thinking, what am I doing? But I just pushed through it and I talked about Saeed. I talked about my faith and I just had to get over how it went. But it was definitely something that I got to meet different people like Jed Bush, and just got to just be in that environment and allow God to use me even there with different people that might have never heard about Saeed and our faith.
How are your children doing?
They are okay. They're hopeful. This is the hard part for me. My son's really hopeful. He wrote a birthday invitation for his dad. And he was writing some invitations and he wrote one for him and he said, Mommy, can you make sure this gets to him? And it's hard for me because they're really hopeful that he will be home in a few weeks and things don't look that way. And it's just hard to see them disappointed again. But it's hard because the birthdays are the big things. They think, Mom, you know, it's been 3 birthdays, now going on 4th birthdays. My daughter will be 9. And if he's not home by September, last time she would have celebrated would have been when she was 5. And those are the hardest time for them when they feel like they're growing up without him and they count another year. And as a mom, I just have to be there for them and hold them and hear their cries and just walk them through it. And it's really hard for me. Those milestones are really hard for me it's very painful for them.
Now, I mean, finally, the president speaking with you when he was in town, any more fallout from that?
I had a good meeting after the meeting with president with the religious freedom ambassador. But really, I just had the feel even after the president and last week, especially in D.C., that really everything's trying to be silenced. You know, we had pictures of the president. They don't want us sharing them because everything's just trying to be silenced until they get that deal. And if it means silencing any talks about Saeed or any media and trying to silence anything negative, and that it was just I've had to realize that the president met with me, but he was, I guess, and I saw sincerity, but I think part of it was to appease a lot of the Christians and a lot of people that were saying, why aren't you doing anything? But at the same time, still, they're moving forward with a deal and not securing Saeed's release. And the deal's more important to them. And that's heartbreaking for me. I just have to trust God and just take it day at a time.
Let's pray that there'll be a surprise and Saeed will be returned when they do that deal.
Yes, that's what I'm praying.
Nagmeh, thank you, and God bless.
Thank you. God bless you.
Nagmeh Abedini with us. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Dave Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Men, 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 manly men, 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 manly men, men, men,
men, men, men, manly men.
And here we are. It's the Manly Man segment, Friday at 580 KIDO. Dave, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin.
A late night for you last night, early morning today.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. I was in the house by about 10:15, 10:20, back up at this point. So it wasn't too bad.
Well, tell everybody what you were doing.
Just involved with the boys' 5A state basketball playoffs.
And your thoughts on watching all those games, calling them, working them?
Just a lot of fun. You know, it gets exciting for the kids. I really like watching the students. They come out there in great support, family and friends, a couple thousand people at the Idaho Center. It's going on throughout the Treasure Valley because you have all the way from the, you know, the small schools, the 1A schools up to the larger schools, the 5A schools. So, at different venues, Meridian High School, I think at Bora High School, and of course the Idaho Center, the Ford Idaho Center. So spread throughout the Treasure Valley, lots of people from all over the state visiting.
Everybody going crazy, if you will?
Yeah, you know, it gets a little bit more competitive today. They went through the semifinals, so some of the teams, you know, off to consolation, others off to the quarterfinals now. So it gets a little more intense, and more people always come into town on Friday. They, you know, if they're from out of town, if you're from Buell, you may not have come up on Thursday, but you'll come up on Friday in hopes of spending the weekend.
Well, how were the kids? Were they kind of, you know, spirited? You know, we see the college basketball and how people get into it. How is it at the high school level?
You know what? It's actually very similar. They always put in either end, they fill the bleachers with the stands. They're more than bleachers. I mean, they're like 30 rows high. They put the students in the end sections. So they all do their crazy thing with their fat heads and they're all painted up and, you know, so they always have fun. And it's a very similar. They've, you know, the high school kids have tried to copy what they've seen done in college. And so it's always kind of fun to watch that.
Anything to take away as far as potential college stars?
You know, out of the 5A that I've seen, right now out of the senior class, I see one kid that has D1 potential, that being Derek White out of Capital. He has that potential for D1. It's difficult for Idaho, and here's the reason why. If you get a big kid who's 6'8", typically in Idaho, you know, kid who's 6'8", they've got one who plays for Rocky Mountain right now, Colby Lee. He's only a sophomore, but he's 6'9". But you have somebody who's 6'9", you're going to stick him at the center, and so he'll play the post. Now, 6'9", that's nice, but that's a forward in college, so this kid has spent his whole time playing the center position, and he'll be looked at as a forward in college, so he'll be overlooked because he doesn't have those skills. So sometimes for Idaho, just because they play kids out of position, difficult to get those D1 scholarships.
You know, I was trying to think, there was a guard in the NBA, or maybe it was David Robinson or somebody, that his high school coach made him play guard, even though it would have been better for the team if he would have played like forward or center. And I can't remember what it was. And when he got to the next level, the level after that, he always credited his coach
yep.
with looking out for him to make sure that he had these skill sets. I guess he would play guard at the higher levels.
Yeah.
And that really helped his game.
Yeah, for further down the line. And that, you know, that happens a lot here at the high school level. You get a kid who's 6'8". He's not going to play guard, but that's what he'd play in, definitely in the pros, if not just college. I mean, a lot of these guards in the NBA, they're 6'8".
Right.
So
remember when Magic Johnson was unique?
Yeah.
6'8".
Now he's the norm.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it doesn't make it difficult, but yeah, there's a couple kids out there. That Colby Lee kid, he's somebody that has real potential. A place for Rocky, but only a sophomore. 2 more years to groom him up.
Hmm.
But, and again, you know, it's not necessarily about the college level. They're enjoying themselves at the high school level right now.
Glory days.
Yep, it is. It's those days that, you know, as we get older, we all remember that. Well, I remember when I did that.
Right.
You know, you get a lot of that. And it's interesting watching the crowds because you get a lot of that in parents and in fans that, well, I remember back in 1974 we did this.
Right.
So it's fun. It's a good time.
You know, speaking of nostalgia, I was, you know, I love reading magazines, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my new favorite magazine, in fact, I was so mad that I haven't gotten Adweek magazine yet. I was talking to a lady back and forth. I said, well, we sent it out to you. I go, well, do I need to tackle the weather or the postman and the weatherman to make sure I get my magazine? And one of the cover stories is 90s nostalgia. And how the millennials, it's been 20 years since we've had the 90s, and all of a sudden now the 90s are what's in. You see that with the Geico or the Allstate commercial. And that's the idea of a bad ad, that you can remember the jingle, but you can't remember the sponsor, where they have salt and pepper or Peppa.
Mm-hmm.
Push it. And then you have all these other icons coming back and basically yearning for, you know, the 90s, if you will. I really wasn't impressed with the 90s, personally. I didn't think it was that great of a generation. You?
I was busy in the 90s. I don't know. I was busy working, making a living in the 90s.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know.
Clintons. You had,
you know.
Let's see. What else did we have there? We had the Clintons. We had the dot-com boom bust. We had the Transformers. We, you know, had the internet starting there.
Yeah. Star Wars. Was that the 90s or 80s? You think? Well,
80. Well, it was the 70s to begin with.
Was it the 70s?
Was 76 was when Star Wars came out.
Wow. I was thinking it was the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah, well, 76.
Boy, what do I know? See, I missed it all. I went from the 80s to 2015.
Well, anyway, so we've got that going on. I just wondered what you thought. See, to me, it will always be the 80s. And it was funny because they did this statistical study that it takes 20 years for people to have the nostalgia for generations, like people in the 70s viewed the 50s, and I guess the 60s viewed the 40s, and you know, vice versa. The 90s viewed the 70s, and there was I recall a lot of people were bringing back the bell bottoms in the 70s, or in the 90s for the 70s.
From the 70s.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's probably accurate, 20 years.
Yeah.
But you know what does surprise me, and I don't know if it is social media that does it, but how many kids today, or how many of them youngsters today, are musically savvy to know who, you know, to know who the Beatles were, to know who the Stones were, to know who, you know, groups growing up through time were that, you know, when, let's put it this way, when I was in high school or just out of high school, I couldn't have told you who Tony Bennett or Frank Sinatra were.
Right.
Didn't know, didn't want anything to do with them. They were my parents' music.
Hmm.
But now there are kids, I know kids that are classic rock fans.
Well, because there's no new rock.
maybe that's it. Yeah, if you go, if you're looking for a rock format, it's difficult to find. There's alternative rock, but that's a little different.
Right. And again, I don't know. It's a lot of Yuck Yuck and Angst, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
That's one of my favorite groups, Yuck Yuck and Angst.
Yeah.
Or is that a legal firm?
Depends on who you talk to. Speaking of a legal firm, you have Hillary Clinton who issued a policy. Now, I always love this when, you know, people say, you know, you're not the boss of me when you have a boss. And so apparently at the State Department, she issued a policy that using your personal email, you could be terminated. So she could be terminated for disobeying her own policy to the minions. Mm. Are you shocked with that one?
No. Are you?
I just wonder in this age of...
Nothing shocks me anymore.
In the age of these Clinton scandals and everything, that, you know, are people actually going to understand that laws were broken? I was, again, watching MSNBC, and the guy goes, with a perfectly straight face, well, she complied with all the laws. No, she didn't!
Yeah, she broke the laws very clearly, that she broke the law.
And then, you know, and I have another theory. I really believe that we might just lose this whole thing. And what I mean by that is the two-party system, based on the fact that if you watch anything on television, the Republicans are always the bad guys. And that, whether it's fiction or not, we're just joking. It's always those evil Republicans. And then when you have the Democrats on the real TV, that probably is more deceitful than the fake TV, repeating these points, it just becomes the self-fulfilling prophecy. And entertainment has pretty much dictated social, moral, and political outcome.
I know that's heavy for a Friday.
It is heavy.
But you watch these things, and it's, oh, those Republicans, they're bad. They want to take away your rights, Dave Burnett.
Yeah, and they, you know, and they always try to bring up that, well, Colin Powell did it. Well, it was not illegal when Colin Powell did it. They made the law after that.
I think they made the law while she was there.
Yeah.
She instituted the law.
But let me ask you this, and I keep coming back to this. Why wouldn't there have been a red flag for somebody, anybody, that, I mean, most of these lawmakers are lawyers.
Hillary?
Rose, lawyer.
Rose Law Firm.
You know, so it's not like they're dummies like me. Oh, I think, I'm a senator. I'm going to set up my own email. It's DaveBurnettSenator@gmail.com. Their lawyers are very smart. They're versed in the law. Wouldn't that have been a red flag to somebody? I mean, that went on for years.
They're versed in how to avoid the law.
Yeah. Kept to the server under her control. So, yes, I want to share my emails. Well, we don't know what's been purged out. I guarantee you there's somebody full-time who is in charge of that where they told, okay, if it's about this, put it into that super secret file over there or drop it onto this thumb drive.
Well, and then they say, well, she's going to release the stuff that related to business. Well, who's to say?
Exactly. Those that were bad may have been purged. I'm not saying they were, but they might have been. We'll never know. We will never know.
So we've got that going on. Also, two former governors going after the current governor because of the nuclear waste issue.
Yep.
You had a chance to see that late night last night.
Yeah, when I got in, I just flipped on the TV and just saw a little bit of it as Governor Andrus and Governor Batt, former governors of Idaho, joining together to try to legally stop any waste from coming into Idaho as they join up on forces to say, yeah, no, not good for the state.
If Butch's administration wants to bring more in, they should take it to the people, said Batt. They're the ones who said they didn't want any more.
The people did?
Yeah, well, that's the quote from Batt. The waste would be used for research and mean $200 million for over 10 years in lab and state, for the lab and state. That's something Governor Otter highlighted. The allegation that I'm doing anything less than protecting Idaho under the terms of the 1995 settlement agreement is simply wrong. No governor has shipped more waste out of state than me.
To Yucca Mountain.
Angst and ha-ha. Yuck, yuck.
Yep. So a little internal. Well, there is some donkeys and elephants getting together for something, Kevin. You don't see that very often.
Well, you know, former Governor Batt, we've been chasing him for a while. He's a very progressive guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he went to vote one time, did you hear him? They didn't know who he was. He goes, "I'm Cecil Andrus." Ha ha. Made a scene. And yet, you know, he's still out there. We'd love to get him on. He's a very progressive guy when it comes to social issues.
Yeah. So,
by the way, here is what some people have called perhaps the most effective governor ever in the state of Idaho, Cecil Andrus.
Called a press conference.
Well, that's Justin Kaur.
Opposition to what they say are planned shipments of commercial nuclear waste to the Idaho National Laboratory.
Well, he's no Cecil Andrus, is he?
No, that's News Channel 7's Justin Kaur.
He'll tell you that if you didn't know that.
Yep. Well, you'll get to it later here.
Yes, I think this is just they threaten to sue, but this is just a rehash of the old press conference.
Maybe it was, you know, and like I said, I just saw when I came in, flipped the TV on, and saw that, and it's like, oh, they're back at that again.
Did they send you a news release?
Did they? I have not checked that. That is on a different email server, Kevin. That's one that goes to my house. I'll have to check that later. I'll let you know, though. I'll release them all to you.
Thank you, because we want to know what's going on in your life.
I do know this. On one of my other super secret emails, your traffic now, I did get information. Gowan Road is going to be closed.